Welcome back to Plot Pit, the show where we forge fiction from fact and folklore. William Atkinson here in studio with...
John LeMay.
Also in studio, very special guest, Beverly Coutts. Thank you for taking your time and coming up to us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So this is part two from our Tuesday episode, going into a conclusion. John.
Yeah, I just had an instinct we could actually stretch this into two parts because we were coming up on our conclusion, and I think we still had a lot to say about this story. So I'm going to do a brief recap on the fact and the fiction. Obviously, anybody listening to this, you've got to listen to part one or you will be lost.
Absolutely, and that was fossils and mythology, and then, of course, we added sneezing at the end. Let's begin the descent.
Okay, so where we were last time, factually, our jumping off point was... Native American lore concerning dinosaur fossils. Because, like the Navajo tribe, for instance, they do not want to touch the fossil of a dinosaur or the bones of anyone or any creature. Because they feel like the ghosts are tied to the bones. And there was even some belief that you could accidentally conjure the ghost of a dinosaur by handling its bones, or ghost of a monster, whatever. So there was some danger if you unearthed these creatures from beneath the earth. They also believed that these creatures were destroyed by thunder beings who hurled lightning from the sky to destroy them, and they sank into the earth and became these fossils, and that's where they need to stay. That's kind of their viewpoint. So, and then we also touched upon early day fossil hunting in the Wild West and how some of these early day paleontologists would have feuds with each other like Cope and Marsh. So what we did, we constructed a story with two competing paleontologists. We decided to put it up to the 1950s, so it was in more modern times. And basically, Beverly and I cheated a little bit. We hashed out the story further here in the green room in between breaks. And Beverly and I had the idea that, okay, so one of the paleontologists finds this certain bone, so does the other one, and these two guys are competitors, but very begrudgingly, they decide to fit the fossils together to see, you know, if they can make sense of this strange animal they found. And Beverly had the idea, okay, one, because this is kind of a story about duality. There's a lot of duality to it. The one paleontologist, he unknowingly has the bone of the Thunderbird, which is the good monster. Dinosaurs and birds can be kind of similar, so it doesn't seem far-fetched that, you know, maybe one would have the bone of a reptilian dinosaur and one has the bone of a bird. And they're going to kind of try and put them together. And so Beverly's idea was, okay, they're accidentally conjoining the bones of the two enemy monsters, thinking they're the same thing. And possibly it creates this disastrous chimera spirit of a hybrid monster. Right, Beverly?
Yeah. Yeah. We like hybrid spirits. They make us sneeze.
But anyway, and then our other folkloric aspect from last episode was kind of like a female mythological figure from the past. Beverly, you brought up one from Japan, right? That had kind of a dual nature.
Yes. Well, Yes.
Yeah. So she has like a good nature and a bad nature. And the idea was that she travels to our plane of existence to take care of this monster that shouldn't exist. But her different aspects get separated into different ones where she's got the bad version of herself running around and the good version. And basically, you know, I would see it that the good version will contact these two paleontologists and tell them what they've done. Or maybe the good version works with one paleontologist and the bad version with another. And they have different agendas. But the point is, the two competing paleontologists, they're going to have to work together to help conjoin this female deity, whatever she is, so where she's whole again, then she can destroy the evil monster spirit that's rampaging or whatever. So that's the end game, the goal. Reunite the female spirit with her other half so she can kill the bad monster. And those two have to overcome their differences. And we were just going to flesh out their characters a little bit more this episode.
Yeah, and so... one of the other things that you've spoken about bones and ghosts. So I like the idea that this new monster that they've created, it's actually a whole new monster, but it lives entirely in the spirit realm. It's a metaphysical monster. It's not a corporeal monster, but that the paleontologists can see it and know it, even though it's not tangible. And that scares them both because up until this time, they had thought they were on the wavelength with the whole mythical world, but now all of a sudden they're face to face and they're terrified. And so then when the old lady comes in, our old lady. Let's call her something.
Yeah, we need a name. What was the name of this Japanese figure? Can you remember?
I can't remember. It was, oh, shoot. But I keep coming up with Bubba or Baba. Baba. Ooh. I like Baba.
Baba. Okay, so in Russian folklore, in the fairy tales, there's Baba Yaga.
Yes,
who's kind of
yes.
the grandma witch, okay? And there's Kashe the Deathless and Baba Yaga. So there's a plethora of opportunity that we could pull in from some Russian folklore. But I do like the name Baba because in Russian, the name for grandma is Babushka. Okay, and yeah. So Baba's short. And what we could have is the incarnation of the motherly earth or grandma earth or grandma balance or something, right?
I've got an idea. I think this is how we fix it. This is how we simplify it. You know, it's a movie, so obviously we're not using real historical figures. Let's throw out the historical tribes too. It's a fictional tribe with a fictional matriarch figure
that
we just made up. So like, I wish they have so many, like Spider-Woman, Badger-Woman. I'm afraid to even put forth a name lest it be a real one. But I mean, let's just say she's some sort of whatever spirit woman for a fictional tribe we just made up. That's who she is.
Yeah.
Or
no, I like that too.
Or we're no longer even on Earth. We're on a rogue planet that has been ejected from its star and is now traveling the metaverse. Okay. Mm. So it's not even a physical planet. We're over in the metaphysical world. Or the metaphysical universe, crossing through boundaries of planes of existence.
I say we make that, we do episodes where we take past episodes and be like, this is our variation. Because I think we've still got a lot, because my ideas have to tie into Earth.
Okay.
I've got some very specific Earth ideas. So that, like, yeah.
Okay.
That'll kill my depth to these two paleontologists.
Well, then by all means, we're on Earth and we have a fictional tribe.
Okay. I like the fictional tribe, though, because then we're not insulting cultures or anything. And well, we're probably insulting cultures just by virtue of living, but anyway.
And your ghost monster is good, too, from a budgetary perspective, because Williams said 1950s B-movie, and they never had a budget, so you'd have an invisible ghost monster that you never had to see except for once in a while.
I love it.
Well, actually, correction, I did say 1950s. Paleontologist on the Loose movie.
Oh, okay. That's true.
We could still be in a high budget movie and just totally botch it to where it's worse than cable.
Well, my other. No, let's not do that.
Let's not botch it until it's worse than cable. I mean, for goodness sake.
Okay, now speaking of botching it, so like right now we have what sounds like a fun adventure story, but you've got to have deeper subtext. And this is the other thing Beverly and I talked about is these two, because we're doing a lot of duality again. We've got the duality of the two monsters that hate each other. You've got the duality of the female figure. So these two paleontologists have to represent that. So one of our paleontologists is going to be an evolutionist, and one is going to be a creationist.
Ooh, I like it.
Exactly. They're both using the fossils to push their beliefs and their agendas, and they're both going to meld in the middle because of the Native American beliefs. And this is really interesting because I'm kind of speaking from some personal experience here. Dinosaurs caused big, big problems for Christians with the book of Genesis. Now, the book of Genesis, if you read it in the original Hebrew, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earths, there's an ellipsis. It's not a period. That's a big deal. Because ellipsis, as a writer, it's a suggestion. It's a fading away. It's anything can happen in an ellipsis. So it was really a horrible thing to take that ellipsis out because it makes it sound concrete. It's done. But the ellipsis implies a passage of time, whatever you want. Now, in that ellipsis, I think you could definitely have the days of the dinosaurs. And I also think that the Native Americans are onto something when they talk about destructions of past worlds. Because one of, the Aztecs do this as well. Their third world, which was the world prior to the world destroyed by the flood, that we all, are familiar with, the third world was destroyed by fire from the sky, which sounds a lot like an asteroid killing the dinosaurs. So my thought is this creationist paleontologist, he's really confused by these dinosaurs because he can't see how they add up with the Bible. But when he learns the Native American myths about how there were previous worlds, kind of, sort of, that don't really contradict Genesis, they're just in that ellipsis, that's where he, you know, learns from the Native American culture. And then I really don't know what the evolutionists would learn from them because they're so spiritual and he's not. But that's just kind of my idea, that they would both meld into these Native American beliefs.
Well, maybe the evolutionist isn't, he's like an evolutionist, but what he does, he's more of an artist. Mm-hmm. He sees beauty in the concrete,
okay.
in the real. And on top of all of that, he's not opposed to Genesis being beautiful. He's not opposed to the poetic imagery. He's not opposed to it being a love song to a nascent group of beings, right? People in general. And so while he discredits it scientifically, he doesn't discredit it emotionally or anything like that.
Interesting.
But, so he's going to fight, but he doesn't have the words to fight the creationist, because the creationist understands the concrete, and he's
You know, so playing on that, my thought for this particular paleontologist that is the evolutionist is, even in the theory of evolution, you have to take certain things by faith, okay? So this very well could be a lesson or a commentary on faith and how you grow your faith, or how you, you know, learn to live to some degree by faith. So you've got the creationist who is forced to, the creationist is forced to observe evidence that is potentially contradictory to his viewpoint. So he's challenged to update his views on science or the physical world and all of that, right? Whereas on the other side, the duality of this is you've got your evolutionist who is purely scientifically minded and evidence-based only, and he's having to update his worldview to include the idea that there are some things I cannot yet explain, and that's not a bad thing. I just take certain things on faith that they work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what I really like about what you're kind of getting at is that we have this hardcore guy who's looking at the science, but he's naturally science-minded. So even though he's accepted only the creationist view, he's kind of the nuts and bolts, you know, facts are facts are facts, and he's having to look at facts. And then this guy who should be the facts are facts are facts, but he's not. Who he is he's kind of like, oh, wow, you know, look at the beauty of this. Look at, you know, and so not only are they warring with each other, but they're kind of warring it inside themselves.
Oh, I have the sudden image in my head of a classic stereotyped 1960s hippie meets classic stereotype 1950s rocket scientist.
Yes, yeah. Perfect. Yeah, perfect. Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because the era, I don't think the era we set it in really matters. Because,
no.
I mean, the creation versus evolution debate is still as heated as it was back in the Old West, and it still is today. So it really doesn't matter.
No, it really doesn't. And so on a secondary commentary note, just put a pin in it and then drop it. In my previous podcast, the William Atkinson episode, going through the Droswell Daily Record archives, I came across an article where you had an evolutionist come and speak at then the first building at NIMI, and the audience filled with, I don't know, about 100 people or so, had 2/3 of the audience heckling this professor over the issues. So it is a very heated...
Current.
Yep. So you're right. I don't think time period really matters here. So we can scratch off the 1950s part and then just put warring factions of paleontology.
Yeah. Well, and maybe the Baba figure, what she ends up doing, how she ends up finally coming together, is she sees these two individuals first as beings that are warring within themselves, and begins to try, and one side of her begins to try to heal them. And then they begin to try to heal their relationship. And that, more than anything, causes the rift or the breach to form back into a membrane, and she's able to see the other half of herself. And
well, I like that's perfect. That could not be more perfect, that when they resolve their differences, she comes together and she can finally slay the monster. That's perfect.
Yeah.
And of course, it's got to happen when all hope seems lost and the monster's destroying the city or whatever it's doing, and, you know, things look grim, because that's just how stories have to be.
Yeah. Yeah. If there's no conflict, there's no fun.
Yeah.
Precisely. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we tell stories in the first place, is to self-explanitate.
I like explanitate. It's like sneezing.
a self-evaluation of our culture, right? Either it could be I'm telling the story to myself to maybe process emotional issues, or I'm telling the story to my child to, you know, illustrate a life lesson, or I am, I don't know, just an artist doing social commentary on society, right? Yeah. So stories do carry meaning, and we are faced constantly daily with challenges. And if a story doesn't have challenge, it's unexciting. Like, okay, here's a story for you, folks.
The daisies were pretty.
Yeah.
I walked outside.
Yeah. So I'm like, so I'm in a course. It's a lovely course by Jonathan Rogers. It's online. Writing with Flannery O'Connor. One of the things that Flannery O'Connor talks about is what is a story? And what she says is that it's a complete dramatic event. This is in one of her essays. It's a complete dramatic event. Well, drama requires conflict, right? And you don't have any drama if you don't have... How many drama kids do you know? Well, a lot, right? And the other thing that I hasten to mention is that it's also specific to a personality. So you can have all the drama in the world, but if it's theoretical, it doesn't make a story. But when it comes down to Will and John, now we've got some drama.
But from the perspective of being outside the green room here, John and I fight all the time. Yeah, we just sound cordial on the mic.
One day they'll do a biopic on us where it's like, they were so peaceable at first, and then, I'm just kidding. But no, okay, this brings me to a theme actually for our story we didn't touch upon, because this is also pretty prevalent in a lot of creation myths, especially the Mesoamerican, Native American. Part of their theme sometimes, I wish I was better versed on this, but part of the theme is creation comes through conflict. Like the conflict of the peoples brings about the next world. Basically, the good people and the bad people. This is especially in the Hopi creation myth.
Oh, wow.
You've got the good people and the bad people fight, and then the creator comes down and says, okay, good people, you're going to go hide with the ants. I'm going to kill the bad people for like the third or fourth time, and then it's going to be it. This world's going to be like the final world, and you needed to behave this time. And that's kind of their, but that's the theme of those, creation through conflict and violence. So, I mean, that could be part of our story too. Like if we really wanted to add another element to it or a sequel, maybe the real threat is because of this abomination monster from the fossils that will induce the destruction of the current world and the birth of the new world. And then you could have a philosophical debate of, oh, maybe we should just let the new world be born. And I don't know.
Okay. So I want to, I'm going to bring back my idea of Jupiter as a dragon egg.
Oh, yeah. That's from way back.
From really far back. Okay, so let's take that. We are in the metaphysical. We can take this, and we have the Native American belief that potentially we came from within the earth, right? Okay, so there you have this metaphoric or the metaphysical cosmic dragon or this creature. And let's tie it to the story of the phoenix.
Yeah.
Okay, so right there, you've got your rebirth. Okay, and we are going through this apocalyptic time. We've got personalities and conflicts, and specifically we're down to these two paleontologists, right, who bring the bone from one and the bone from the other together inadvertently, not realizing what it's going to create. And that's the start of the story of the phoenix and how it rebirths itself. And they do this in the center of the earth.
Oh, cool.
So you've got these two warring paleontologists who are digging down into the crust of the earth, right? They find this Jules Verne's tunnel. They get down into the center. They find these two bones that bring them together, and boom, the cosmic dragon egg is fertilized.
Ooh, yeah.
Okay, so that's like the physical side of what's going on. And then we have the motherly sage that's coming about, and you've got the warring factions that are just outright. And then when they realize, oh, no, we've got a problem that we just, now they are back and forth blaming who did what. Okay. Yeah. And now you've got a Baba who shows up and she's trying to heal, right, the emotional conflict that's going on. because she knows this was all supposed to happen in order for, like you said, the ants to go down into the center of the earth and be safe mm-hmm. while the creator Ooh, destroys yeah. cool. all the bad people on the planet oh, to nice. Rebirth us into a new utopia. And then, of course, you have the cosmic creator, mm-hmm. whoever, you know, coming down from booming clouds or whatever. Yeah. And then, okay, folks, get it together. This is the last time I'm doing this for you.
Yeah.
The chalkboard is out of chalk.
Yeah.
And I love and it. The fun thing is you could keep going. So the next conflict in the new world, right? And something completely different. But
you really could bring this into a 7-book series, mm-hmm. okay, or a 10-book series or some number that would seem like an appropriate value.
The Hopi believe in 7 worlds. So,
okay.
Yeah. Maybe now, 7 is right.
Each world is humanity discovering a particular emotion.
That is the, okay, that's the Hopi myth. I just want you to know you touched on what really? Was already the myth. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. I had no idea.
Yeah.
So this is
basically not entirely, but each world they discover something new in terms of technology and they get a little worse, but you're basically similar that each world they discover something new, it gets worse.
Okay. I had no idea. I'm not well versed in Native American mythology and everything. I do like that though. That's mm-hmm. beautiful from the perspective of being, I mean, we are emotional creatures,
right?
And we all have our...
Speak for yourself.
We all have those emotions that we wrestle with and that we have to learn to master, yeah. right? We are born with our own dysfunction. And so in like Incarnation 1 or World 1, Book 1, it's all about how to master one's creativity. Because without creativity, you're not going to be able to invent. And then you're not going to transform from the evolutionist standpoint, as a lizard crawling out of the pond and then figuring out fire, right?
Oh, and it would be funny if in trying to master a God-given thing like creativity, all you do is mess it up. And so you force the end of that world and start on something new, and then you're going to master peace or harmony uh-huh. or something. You know, all you do is mess that up, and then
yep.
you know, and then you go on to the next world. And so, as you build up these, I acknowledge that those are not emotions. So I don't know emotions. I'm emotionless. Anyway,
Beverly's a reptilian.
Yes.
From well, I have noticed crash. That the eyelids close in the vertical direction.
Right. So anyway. So, but that way you can build these worlds and you can, you know, keep exploring these crazy ways that, you know, at least in fiction, you explore these crazy ways that man tries to make it better and all they do yeah. is just make it worse.
You know, so we've touched on Genesis a little bit and potentially rethinking the first couple of verses. I'll touch on Revelation with the 7 churches here and just,
oh, there you
and just
go.
Leave it, right? One way I have been, I have learned other people are thinking about those particular churches is that they are incarnations of Christianity, and that group or that time period of Christianity had to learn something before they moved on.
Hmm.
And so each of those churches represents 7 different lessons that the collective of Christendom the had to learn in order to usher in, say, paradise or the second coming or whatever. So I'll just pin that because this isn't a religious show or anything of that
right.
nature. But
it's interesting.
We're hitting on mythology and different ways to look at text and culture and everything else. And I mean, what is story, right? Well, story is being able to learn, you know, from somebody else's view of the resolution of drama and conflict.
Yeah.
So, John, why don't you carry us up into a recap?
Well, I think we went pretty darn deep for a story that started off with like an invisible monster and fossil bones. But okay, so again, we've got 2 different paleontologists with different spiritual scientific viewpoints at odds. They both find a different fossil that they think maybe belongs to the same animal. They mistakenly conjoin it and join the spirits of these dead Native American monsters that are eternally at war. they create a deadly chimera, you know, like chimeras and the mythical Greek monsters that were like half this and half that, that weren't supposed to be like the centaur. But this one would be like a half Thunderbird, half Leviathan, because that was always what was at war. So you've got this invisible spirit monster rampaging. And again, we're working with a fictional Native American tribe with a fictional female hero figure of some kind who has a dual nature herself, and she travels through dimensions, time, whatever, to come save the day. But in her traveling across the dimensions, her personalities get split in half. The two warring paleontologists have to work together to try and stop this monster they've accidentally created. And when those two finally reach their understanding with each other and attain some balance in their lives, the female Native American hero that's kind of mythical and mystical, she reconjoins her two halves of the whole, and she's then able to slay the evil monster. And then the other stuff we talked about emerging into the next world and this and that, that was kind of like just another little flourish maybe we could go down, but we didn't really get too deep into that one. I think that could be a topic for a whole nother episode.
Yeah, it could be. You're right. I like it.
So we have dualities of dualities going on in this story, just all riddled through from variants of the story. But yeah, I think John, you just succinctly put it all together.
And I think you can use the metaphor of the sneeze, because there's a large intake of breath and then a great output. Right.
We all have allergies. If you didn't listen to last episode, we all have allergies. There's a lot of sneezing that we decided to just leave in the show.
Yeah, I'm guilty. All right, folks. We are in studio with Beverly Coots, local author here. Beverly, give us a little bit about yourself.
I'm Beverly Coots. I'm a local gal, an incurable dog sap, a widow, a mother, a writer trying to be read.
Aren't we all?
A very sweet spirit you are, that is for sure.
She's not really a reptilian.
No, not really. At least not in this room. Folks, we hope that you've enjoyed this episode. This is the end of a two-parter that we started on Tuesday. So for now, you can catch us on Twitter at Plot Pit. You can listen to the podcast on pretty much any of your podcast streaming services. We have a live Twitch stream coming soon, and YouTube content is being posted. So if you've been teased with that long enough, well, here we go. In the meantime, if you want to be on the show, you can email us submissions@plotpit.com. We are wanting to do a sequence of episodes with readers. So if you are interested as a reader, what you like from authors, how you read a book, what's your favorite genres or whatever, we'd love to hear from you. And then musicians and poets. I'm also wanting to get a series on musicians and poets. I have an individual coming to town as an old college buddy coming in for the UFOs Festival. And we are going to have him on the program. He is a musician from Austin, Texas.
Oh, nice.
So it'll be fun to have a musician on the show. If you are a musician or a poet and want to be on the program, we'd love to have you and have a series of episodes for that. John, I think that's it.
I think that's everything.
All right. Beverly, you have any comments on the way out?
No, thank you.
All right. It was an honor to have you in the studio again. And we will have you in again, I don't know, in a couple of months or so.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Excellent. All right, folks. Again, submissions@plotbit.com. In the meantime, goodbye from Roswell.